Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're happy to have with us this hour of the program the author of The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War. Frances Ritchie writes that The Warrior is a memoir that's written in 28 poems and dedicated to her son, Ben, who served two tours of duty in Iraq. Most of this book was written while Ben was deployed. Writing became her refuge and a source of hope while she waited for him to come home. Many families, she writes, are still waiting for their loved ones who are in combat or dangerous circumstances. Lately, I've been receiving letters and emails from military moms and others who've read poems from Warrior and want to share their own experiences and express their concern for our deployed soldiers and their families. Sometimes they have questions about the poems. So there's an email way to reach her and have a conversation that will carry on after we finish our conversation on the radio. Frances was born and raised in West Virginia and worked in the business world for almost two decades. She does have some Wisconsin ties, having lived, I believe, in Neenah for some time. She worked in the business world and then left to teach yoga and to write and to work in hospice. Her first collection of poetry was The Burning Point. She lives in New York City, and she would, when she was a child, sometimes hide behind the couch and read poems by Emily Dickinson because she liked the music of it. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine that we'll have quite a few. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do that, and that's talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Frances, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you wrote these, and it's also such a contribution to so many families all around the country who are experiencing what you are, and what better way to do that than on the very deep level that you can communicate, which is through poetry, right?
Well, poetry is a different way to communicate, and, you know, when I was writing the poems, it never occurred to me that they would go beyond my son reading them and maybe a few friends, and maybe if the book got published, maybe a few people beyond that. So this has been really heartening that people are interested in the subject.
Mm-hmm. It must have come as quite a shock to you. And tell me about your initial thoughts when your son decided to go to West Point. It sounds like you had different political views. And then certainly when he went to Iraq and you were not much in favor of what was going on there, and here's your only son you raised by yourself going to Iraq, of all places.
Well, it was hard, particularly at the time when we went into Iraq. That was a very hard time for me as his mother because I knew that he was going to be going. And part of it was the political aspect, but the major piece was just that I didn't want him to be in combat. I was afraid that he would go over there and never come home.
Right. You talk about the fact that you thought that you had lost him, not physically, but emotionally. What do you mean by that?
Well, over a period of several years, we had... he describes it as a door that was closing. It's been interesting. We've done some interviews together, and I had not thought of that metaphor, but when he was in Special Forces training, which started in 2001, our political arguments just took on a different, a different level, a different layer. We were still debating the same things, but, you know, all of a sudden, his life, work, his commitment, it really is life and death. And mm-hmm. And so our debating became, I'll just say for myself, it became painful.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I didn't stop criticizing the administration. And I didn't realize during those years that it took me a while to realize that when I criticized the administration, who I felt, you know, I still feel is a terrible administration, that he was taking it personally because he was going to go to war, and he saw it as, you know, his duty, and it felt like a personal criticism. So a door of communication was closing, and I didn't realize it. And then suddenly he was leaving for Iraq, and we hadn't mended our relationship. And so my fear was that not only would he not come home, but that he would never really be able to take in how much I loved him and that I supported him, even though I was just afraid that our relationship would never be mended.
Mm-hmm.
It's even hard to talk about now, because even though now he's home and safe, I know there are so many other parents who are, you know, going through something similar, and it's hard.
Oh, I'll bet it's hard. I'll bet it's hard. And you, tell me how you have said that I'm just so happy that this book has given me a bridge back to your son. You showed him some of the poems, and all of a sudden, it started opening a little, right?
Well, it was, the answer is yes. It wasn't quite all of a sudden. It was sort of gradual. Mm-hmm. I didn't show him the poems. He had seen three or four of the poems in the book, but they were older poems. The new poems he had not seen, and of course that's most of the book. And I didn't show him those poems until he came home a second time, and he had been home for a while. And because, you know, I just knew that it would be a lot to take in. And so I sent him a few poems at a time. And he would read them. He's out in Colorado Springs, and I'm here in New York. He would read them, and then we would talk about them on the phone. And what I noticed was that it was just easier for us to talk about things in general. There was this tension whenever we had any kind of conversation that just gradually began to lift. And I had a sense that it might be his reading of the poems, but we didn't actually... I didn't actually hear him say that until the book came out, and he went on some of the book tour with me, and people asked him questions, and it was indeed some of the poems that started opening that door again.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how hard it was for you to make the transition to accepting what he was doing with his life when... when he was five, you wouldn't even let him own a toy gun. And then he goes to West Point. I mean, that's very hard to understand, I would think, as a mom, how he moved into being a very different person.
Well, you know, I have to say about Ben, he has changed my perception of what a warrior is during the time that... During the time that he was going through Special Forces training, I was already starting to do some writing just to sort of relieve that fear that I was carrying around with me for him. And one night we were talking on the phone about the samurai. He was reading a book about the samurai, and he said, "Look, Mom, a warrior, if you go back to the samurai, those were men in a village who loved their families. And they were the men who were designated to protect the village." Hmm. And he said, "That's the way I see my work." Hmm. So you know, I'd come from the Vietnam years, and that was really, it was almost like tunnel vision, and it was hard for me to widen my lens. It started when he went to West Point. I did start to see. That, you know, there was so much more to our history than just the history I personally had lived through, and that there truly is a long gray line, and that many, many great people have gone through West Point, and that we do need to have a defense for our country. I mean, that's a reality. But we want a defense with integrity, and what I saw at West Point was a lot of integrity and a real sense of purpose and duty that, you know, all of the cadets I met had that desire. I mean, you know, I can't speak for all of the cadets everywhere, but I think in general, that's what draws a lot of these kids to West Point, is that desire to serve, to do something selfless, to be honorable, and that was certainly in the end, that was certainly a big part of what it was for Ben.
Mm-hmm. And yet here you are as a mom, and what we believe as moms, and sometimes go overboard with this, is to keep our children from harm, to keep our children from getting hurt, right? And here he is going to Iraq.
You know, I just think it's built into our DNA.
Right.
I really do.
Right.
And I've talked to so many moms. And in fact, I had the wonderful, I had the wonderful experience of talking to Anna Quinlan a few weeks ago. You know, that was sort of like, oh my God, I'm so glad I lived long enough to talk to this wonderful person. It's sort of like every moms you've never heard of, moms who you have heard of, we all share that. I haven't talked to anyone, any mother, on the road or through email, that isn't the bottom line. They just wish there was some way they could protect their kids. And, even when they're grown and basically they're out there protecting us in a way, still, it's in us. We carried them. We loved them. We, watched them fall down and get up again. And it's just, you want them to keep getting up again.
Right. You're right. You believed if you were present for his football games, he wouldn't get hurt. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Magical thinking. You know, when you have no control, and this is just me, but when I have absolutely no control, I'm consciously aware that I'm playing a trick on myself. But it does help to think, well, if I'm here, nothing will happen. And, mm-hmm. and I sure did do that.
Yeah. Do you want to pick? I hate to pick one for you. Do you have the book in front of you?
I do.
Good. Would you just pick one so we get a flavor, the audience gets a flavor of how you're writing about him? I don't know which one you want, but any one you want to read to us.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, his number one favorite one is a poem called Letters. And I have just found that out in the last several weeks.
Hmm.
So when I'm asked to just read one, I can read both parts or I can read the second part.
No, read both parts.
Both parts.
Sure.
Okay. So this is Ben's favorite poem, and the one that he said sort of was the first one that really, he uses the word, floored him and caused him to think about, what it might be like to be at home waiting for someone.
Hmm.
Letters. Before he left for combat, he took care of everything. Someone to plow the driveway, cut the grass. And the letter he wrote me, just in case, sealed somewhere in a drawer, can't be opened, must be opened if he doesn't return. I feel for my keys, hear his voice. Less is better. Late for work, still I linger at the window of the century florist, a bowl of peonies, my face among the tulips. Last Mother's Day, when he was incommunicado, nothing came. 3 days later, a message in my box, a package. The mailroom closed. I went out into the lobby, banged my fist against the desk. When they gave it to me, I clutched it to my chest, sobbing like an animal. I spoke to no one, did not apologize. I didn't care about the gift. It was the note I wanted, the salt from his hand, the words.
Well, and that was the one that got to him.
That was the one that got to him. I just, I was so touched by that. What he said was that when he read this poem, I've heard him say it several times, that when he read this poem, and I think it's the third or fourth poem in the book, he said that he realized that our arguments, the things we argued about were silly,
mm-hmm.
and that what was really important was the relationships with
mm-hmm.
people you love.
Yeah.
And, from a Green Beret, that's really kind of amazing.
I know. What happens when you watch, or I don't know if you keep yourself from watching when he was overseas, I know you did watch the news. Did you see your son in all those faces and all those tragedies?
I truly did see him in, when I would watch, and I did, I watched all the news.
Mm-hmm.
I read everything I could find. Even though it was painful, I felt like if I watched the news and I just immersed myself in everything that I could find out about what was going on over there, that somehow that would give me a connection to him,
mm-hmm.
and maybe some small sense of what he might be going through. And so it was sort of that, I think it runs through the book, that feeling of I want to see and yet I want to know, and yet I don't want to know. But I felt like I couldn't turn away from the news. Mm-hmm. And I did, when I would hear soldiers, young soldiers, you know, on the news being interviewed or talking about their experiences and or reading what they said in the New York Times, I did very much associate them with my son as well.
And what about his experiences? Has he taken to writing his own poems inspired by you?
Well, he's not writing poems right now, and I don't know that he, I doubt that he wrote, I think he was pretty busy over there. I don't think he wrote anything when he was over there, but I don't know that for a fact. But when he was at West Point, he was a philosophy major.
Oh, my.
Yeah. He always says, you know, I went to the best engineering school in the world, and I majored in philosophy. But so he majored in philosophy and literature, and he was forced to take a poetry class, and he's pretty upset about it, he said. But in the end, and he was a firstie. This was his senior year, and so he took this poetry class, and in the end, he really liked it, and he has some poets who are his favorites. And he did do some writing when he was at West Point, and I still have those poems sort of tucked away, some of the poems that he wrote when he was there.
What's interesting is this dramatic change that's happening in your life as well. Isn't it, Frances, that you're in the corporate world, you know, putting on the high heels and getting dressed to go to work, and then you start working in a hospice, and he's transitioning in his life, and you're transitioning in a fairly dramatic way.
Yeah, that was in the that all was happening in the early 90s. I was in business, you know, and which turned into from working from for a small company in Wisconsin to working to large corporations. I was in business for 19 years, and he was in high school when I started doing the hospice volunteer work. And there's a wonderful hospice here in New York called Jacob Perlow Hospice, and I was sitting with people who were in the last months of their lives, sometimes the last days, and you know, they were, we as volunteers were there to just do whatever was needed, and sometimes all a person really wanted was just to talk to someone, and know that that the conversation would be confidential and they could talk about anything. Mm-hmm. And people really talked about, you know, their lives and whether they felt that they were satisfied with how their lives had gone, and there were many people who weren't, who felt they had missed their lives in some ways. And I was like in my early 40s, and I realized that there were things I wanted to do in my life that I kept putting aside. And when you sit with people who don't have any more time and they tell you their stories, you realize that, you know, this is what you have right now. Mm-hmm. And so if there's something that you want to do, do it now. Mm-hmm. Do it now, because there may not be a tomorrow.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Frances, and we'll take them momentarily. Frances Ritchie is our guest. Perhaps you've already seen her book of poems, The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War. She started writing poems about her son's service in the Iraq War, and it's been receiving very, very powerful reviews. It has been called a powerful collection. It has just been released. She was a single mom, worked in marketing and sales, volunteered in a hospice, and finally left the corporate world to teach yoga and to write, a move that she calls jumping off the cliff. Her son graduated from West Point in 1998, just after he had joined a special forces unit. And this is poems that she's written during his deployments. He had two deployments, and there was some tension between the two of them because of their political beliefs being at opposite ends of a spectrum. But the tension between mother and son gradually dissipated, and they've been, I would love to be in the audience in some of these tours, they've been at bookstores together talking about these poems and talking about their lives. So join us, won't you? I'm sure some of you have experienced, you know, that the anguish of waiting, the anguish of seeing news about this war and having a loved one there, and how you take that in to your heart every day. How do you do that? It must be so hard. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers, 414-227-2050. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Bill Moyers will be joining us. He, of course, has a new book, Moyers on Democracy. Bill Moyers tomorrow, 10 o'clock hour. Frances Ritchie is here now, and her book of poetry, The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War. Our number is 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 in Milwaukee. And we start our calls with Ron from Milwaukee. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning. Frances, your work and thoughts really touched the heart of my feelings and my dilemma in my work, which is to make documentary films during the Vietnam era. I made a film called Mother Love, and when you put the statistics together, the age of the boys, the number of dead, it came out to 240,000 years of mother love down the drain. What a dilemma for you, and it is for me, and I think it is for a lot of Americans, to see the devastation and the horror of war, which we entered into, which we initiated, and to have a son fighting. The artists usually support the idea of there's got to be a better way, there's peace must work, and I come from that background, and yet I still am not sure whether it's necessary to use war as a vehicle of social change and world change. That dilemma for you, can you talk more about it, your own ethical, moral, and heart, and whether we can support soldiers? You know, it throws you back to the German experience where the Germans, you question how could they support the concentration camps and all that sort of thing and Hitler, and yet Americans, we want to support our troops, and yet our troops may be doing immoral, unethical, and horrible things. How do you deal with that?
Wow, that's a big question. I never questioned with my son's integrity, and of course for me, this particular war has had levels and levels of, you know, deeper connection for me than for example the Vietnam War, which was the war of our generation, and I have to say when I was young and the Vietnam War was going on, I really saw the world in black and white, and you know the war was wrong, and I didn't really think about the warriors themselves, the soldiers themselves, in a real way as real people back then, except for the ones who came home, the ones who came home with vacant eyes and who couldn't talk about what they'd experienced, and those people were real to me. But I think I was really young and inexperienced in life itself. Now, I mean, I know my son from the time he was a little boy, and the only time he ever got in trouble in school was when he tried to break up a fight, not when he tried to start one. And honor really means something to him. So I never worried about his integrity. I did worry about what he would see. I did worry about what the things that he might have to do to protect his men or to complete a mission. But I didn't try to think about those things in particular. I just, I was writing. That's what I did. I mean, I think most of what I felt is in the poems in the book. But I have to say that I have found through this whole experience that, and this is just for me, I'm just speaking for myself, I think it's really important to learn how to support our soldiers. I hate to call them the troops. Our men and women in uniform. It is important for us as a country to learn how to support them and to treat them well when they come home, to take care of them when they come home, and to be able to make that distinction between those who are honorable and who serve and those who make decisions that are not honorable and maybe tell lies that cause people to think they're doing the right thing. So I think it's not a black and white issue when it comes to our soldiers. Who knows what they see when they're over there? Who knows what it feels like? I have a nephew who actually one of his friends died in his arms over there. So, I can't really say that if my nephew comes home and, has a hard time, that that there isn't a very good reason for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call, Ron. It was a deep question. Jan from Delafield. Hi.
Hello, Kathleen. I hope you're doing well.
Thank you, Jan.
I'm a Vietnam combat vet. One of the things I did in Vietnam, I was send letters back to the hometown newspaper, and they wanted a certain flavor. And when I sent things to my parents, I simply couldn't tell them really what was going on and how I felt. My father was a naval carrier pilot, World War II, sinking German ships, and my mother was a nurse in the hospital at the Norfolk Navy Yard, so they both knew the consequences of war and combat. Still, I felt I had a need to protect them. And I started writing poetry then, because even though I could couch the words, poetry has a rhythm, or if you will, a vibration of its own, which will still convey feeling and the moment without having to use the words. And when our oldest son joined the Air Force and was sent to Iraq, I had the same need to be able to communicate with him, but without having him sense the fear that his mother and I had for him. And once again, used poetry in the letters I wrote to him. And then an amazing thing happened on the weekend, May 1st through 4th. I was with a group of friends at a retreat, and we held a hope and remembrance ceremony. And I had collected some seashells that I used for pouring a libation. And one of the women in the group of about my age kept hers, which was fine, and later gave it back to me. And it turned out she had heard what I said of hope for our son to return safely from his second tour in Iraq. And she has a son who is in Afghanistan. Hmm. And what she did on the inside of that shell was write a poem.
She wrote a poem on the inside of the shell.
Yep.
So, that's really beautiful. My goodness, I want to thank you for your service, and certainly your whole family has served. But I just don't think we. I think we're getting better at saying thank you and truly meaning it. But thank you for your service.
And thanks for your poetry too.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. And we are talking with Frances Ritchie. Her book is The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War. Tell me about Ben now. He's entering a different phase of his life, Frances, isn't he?
He is. He's been home for quite a while now. So and when I say home, I mean in the United States. And he is leaving the Army after 10 years of active duty.
Oh, my.
Yeah, he's leaving in July. And he is going to the Haas School of Business at Berkeley. So he'll be in San Francisco, which I always have to smile because I'm just so happy that he's going to be going to business school in the fall.
10 years of active service.
10 years active duty, yeah.
Oof. Joan is next from Shawano. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Kathleen. How lovely to hear your voice again.
Thanks, Joan.
Mm-hmm. There are so many stories I could share with you, being a poet and the daughter of a poet who wrote poetry in World War II, and it was published in Stars and Stripes.
Oh.
But the story I want to share with you is about my brother in Vietnam. He was in Vietnam, and like you, I had anti-war feelings, and he was there as a, you know, professional military for 5 years. And there was some problems, usually caused by parents and sibling difficulties, and I'd been a child when he went away. But my mother had open-heart surgery, and after 20 years, we got together again and found out how much we had in common. And until his death 4 years ago, we were best friends.
Mm.
And it was a sharing and a reconciliation. And one last thing I'd like to say is, because this war is done by volunteers, the people who are here don't realize how much these young men do for us. And we, unlike World War II and even Vietnam, we need to support them and to recognize them for what they are. It's an honorable profession.
Frances.
Oh, that's so touching. I'm just trying not to cry here. That's so beautiful, and I know you must be so proud of your brother. And thank you so much for sharing your story with me. I'm just deeply touched.
Thank you so much for your call. Tell me about the visit that you had with Ben to West Point. You were there fairly recently. And how the cadets responded to the poetry and the discussion that followed.
Well, actually, the reading was not for the cadets. We didn't read to the cadets. We were invited there by the West Point Women's Club.
Oh.
And what I'm seeing, I mean, what's just clear as day is that these poems speak to parents of soldiers, mainly mothers, although I'm hearing from more and more men lately. But at any rate, we spoke to the West Point Women's Club, and then the next day, which was lovely, they were just such an amazing group of women and asked such bright questions. And it was really the first time that I heard Ben answering questions.
Hmm.
Except for Fort Bragg, we went to Fort Bragg as well, but it was so new to be sitting beside him and having people ask us both questions. So it was just one of the most thrilling moments of my life, really, to be with him at West Point and at Fort Bragg. And and I have to say, when we drove up to West Point, I realized that I really love West Point. It's a place that means so much to him. It's a beautiful place, and it's a place where he sort of stepped, you know, across that line from being a boy to becoming a man. And
mm-hmm.
He had so many good experiences there, and we had so many wonderful times there when he was a cadet. And of course, this was before the war. And that I felt this, you know, this sort of feeling of love coming up in me for the place itself.
Hmm. And is it hard for him to sit at these poetry sessions and talk? You hear about World War II veterans, Vietnam veterans, many Iraq veterans who simply can't talk about their experiences. It's just too painful for them.
Well, you know, he is a Green Beret, and so he can't talk about his specific missions or anything specific to his mission. He can't talk about. So that kind of is a, you know, that's not even a question that comes up. But in our normal conversation, he does not talk about his experiences over there. The first time he came home, it was extremely painful to see him with so much. It looked to me like he was in a lot of pain. And it was just very hard because he couldn't talk about his experiences. The second time he came home, and I don't know why this is, he was better. And the longer he's been in the United States, the more relaxed, mm. and you know, his sense of humor is there, and he's himself again, or the Ben I knew again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he'll ever be able to talk about his actual experiences over there in the way that soldiers who are not Special Forces soldiers can.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, we were at Fort Carson just a couple of weeks ago, and that's where he's posted at Fort Carson with the 10th Group. And I met one of his commanding officers, and this colonel said to me, he said, "Your son has done some things that have really helped our country that he won't be able to tell you about for a long, long time, but hopefully someday we'll be able to tell you, you know, what he did." I can live with that because my son is alive and I'm at home and looking at life, you know, from an open place.
Great. More phone calls in just one moment. We're speaking with Frances Ritchie this hour. Her book is The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And it's a compelling story. She raised him as a single mother from the age of two. She struggles with the questions of what had drawn her son to his life at West Point, and then a couple tours of duty. Where had it come from, his certainty of purposes? It focuses on the details of her life and her relationship with her son from infancy onward, as well as the emotions during their journey together and their differences. And this big question, which came up with a profound caller earlier, of how to support the warrior if you abhor the war. And I know that there are others of you who are listening who have loved ones who are serving in Iraq right now. How do you handle that? 800-486-8655 is the number, 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Email, feel free to send us an email if you'd like. That's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. Our lines are open for you right now. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We just want to remind you that tomorrow during this time period, Bill Moyers will be our guest. He has a new book, Moyers on Democracy. So that's coming up tomorrow. Like to join our conversation with Frances Ritchie? You can by calling 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And we also have, you know, talk@WPR.org for you to join our conversation. Tell me about the times, because I'm sure there were many of them, Frances, when you found this whole thing rather unbearable from watching the news or from not knowing where your son was. And, I mean, our minds can take us in some terribly dark places at times. And I'm wondering what you did to get out of those places.
Well, I think possibly there were two times that were the hardest. The first was when he was home that first time after the first deployment, and then he was getting ready to go back, and that was the hardest time, because that was a moment that was probably the hardest moment in our relationship, and I felt like I couldn't reach him. And the second was while he was over there during his second deployment. He was incommunicado for, it was either 6 weeks, 2 months, something like that. Mm. And when they go incommunicado, that means that you cannot be in touch with them, they cannot be in touch with you, and it's sort of like they just almost disappear.
Mm.
And then, you know, and then the hope is that they'll resurface. And I think during that time, I mean, I just wrote furiously during that time, and sometimes I, when I would, this is going to sound strange, but sometimes when I would get ready to go to bed and I would be about to fall asleep, I would try to see where he was, and even though, of course, that's impossible on some level, on another level, it just I just wanted to know that he was safe, that he was that he was somewhere alive. And so very often when I would fall asleep at night, I would be, you know, sort of trying to see his face, trying to see him wherever he was, and sort of just send him love. I know it sounds strange, but that's my way of praying, is to try to in some way spiritually be with him.
Yeah. And do you think he sensed that?
I don't know. I am a yoga teacher, and so I do believe that it is possible to reach someone on level deeper than just speaking. And there is a poem in the book called Waiting, and at the end of that poem, the poem talks about a moment when Ben was at West Point, and he had just been through their really hard training when their plebes was their first year, and it's called Beast. And there was a moment where I was thinking about him and sort of praying for him, and he called me shortly after that,
yeah.
And Beast was just over, and he asked me if I was at West Point that day, and I wasn't. I was in Manhattan.
Yes, I remember that one.
And whenever I read that poem when he's with me, he looks up and he says, "That really happened."
Huh.
And so I think with anyone who you love and who you have a deep connection with, you just have to be awake to it. You just have to be aware and allow yourself to believe that, you know, if you felt something, that it really does mean something.
Well, I guess you're just going to have to read that poem for us now, Frances, if you don't mind.
Well, it's kind of, are you sure? It's kind of a long poem, maybe.
That's fine. We have some time.
All right.
Here. Okay.
It's called Waiting. In my dream, a girl floats on a raft. She bends, pulls from the river a small, dark, winged thing, brings it to me, a stone. John, my son's first name, the one we never use, chiseled into it. I'm half awake, 5:15 a.m., 1:15 p.m. in Iraq. On the way to the doctor, I carry the dream in my body over the snowy walk past Woolman Rink, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. in Iraq. Ben has asked for warm clothes, lip balm. I'd forgotten it could get cold in the desert. In the beginning, all the stories were about the heat, anguished faces, that Iraqi man on his knees caught in crossfire, the futile container his arms were around his small son. 9 a.m., 5 p.m. in Iraq. As the cold dime of the stethoscope sweeps my back, I imagine Ben underground in a concrete room, maps spread out on tables, tacked to walls. He moves from map to map, never leaves the room. This is how I keep him safe. The vertigo started in March when he told me he would be deployed. I sat down on the sidewalk at the corner of 43rd and Broadway, waited for the spinning to stop. 12 p.m., 8 p.m. in Iraq. The technician gives me earplugs, presses the button that slides my body into the white tunnel, where harsh knocks and alarms hammer out the map of my brain. Hidden in its burning pigments, the memory of my son when he was 3, sitting by a window, waiting for the rain to stop, so we could walk through the mud to the lake, where we would place our hands on stones, let ladybugs crawl all over them. I believed if I was present for his football game, he wouldn't get hurt. That if I made the 2-hour drive from Stamford to Ramsey in half the time that day he ran into a tree, I could keep him whole in his body. Mid-afternoon September, after Beast, that first training plebe year, I fixed him in my mind, and he called later that evening, "Mom, were you at West Point today?" And I said, "No, but I thought I saw you on the plane." I said, "No, but what time did you see me?" And he named the moment I prayed for him. I thought it had something to do with our heartbeats, like clocks placed in the same room. Once I believed I could close my eyes and know, even when my son was on the other side of the world, if he was alive.
I love that poem. Let's go to Mark from Black River Falls. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you very much for this topic today. We have a nephew that we're going to be able to see this weekend, and before he is sent on a 2-year deployment. And my question is, before your son went overseas, did he go over with a faith of some kind? I know in the Corps, my nephew is a Marine. It seems like they try to strip everything out of you that you rely on and build everything into you to rely on the Marines and the troops and your buddies and the mission.
Right.
And I'm just curious what kind of changes happened to your son in his inner life during this time.
You know, that's such a good question. I think Ben is a very spiritual person. I don't know what his religious belief is, but I know that he was reading a number of books that had to do with Christianity when he left. But I think he was reading to learn rather than having made a decision about that. But I just know that he's a very spiritual person because I've known him since he was a little boy. And I have to say, you know, he's been home now for, I think, a year and a half. He's been in the States for a year and a half. So I still see that in him. I don't think it's been stripped away, but I think you're right that during some of these very intense trainings for the Marines, for Special Forces, that they must do a lot of things to try to break a person down and then build them up with, you know, so that they rely on each other. And I don't know that from Ben. I know that from reading, from reading books about the trainings and that sort of thing. But if you're thinking about your nephew coming home as the person, you know, as the same person, they're all different when they come home. But I have to say that my son's heart and soul is still there, and I find that comforting. And I'm always glad when people ask me about that because your nephew is loved, and he'll feel that love no matter what happens to him.
Thank you very much.
How will you say goodbye to him,
Mark? Well, we're just going to have various family members that can be here in the Midwest from, you know, various parts of the country. His older brother is on a ship right now. He's a naval officer, and he won't be able to be here. But we're just going to be with him and try to celebrate and send him off with a party.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's great. Well, you know, I know he doesn't know me at all, but I want to say thank you for his service, if you can get that message to him, that
sure will.
He's willing to do this. And just know that your love for him, nobody can take that away from these kids.
That's right.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. There are those, though, as you well know, and I'm sure you've seen them in the audiences, a number of people who have come back so broken from this experience, not just Iraq, but Vietnam and
absolutely.
World War II. And, you know, it just makes you wonder why we do these things, you know, why the futility of war, essentially. It's a hard thing to understand about the course of human events, isn't it?
It is. It's truly the agony of being human, I think, to see what we're capable of doing to each other.
Right.
And at the same time, I think we have to hold on to our humanity, and we have to fight against falling into that place of hatred. And that's through this whole experience, one of the things that I have become aware of is that hatred on either side is what takes us to war, and it's listening to each other, even listening to somebody you don't agree with, in my case my son, and not interrupting and really giving the other person a chance to say what they have to say, and just trying to leave that place of hatred. It's okay to be angry, but and the other thing is needing to do something. You know, I think taking some kind of action helps. But in the end, Kathleen, you know, it's from the beginning of time, from the beginning of human experience, there have been wars. And who of us knows why?
Right. Who of us knows why?
It's heartbreaking, but I think this gentleman who was on before, you know, you could just hear his love for his nephew and wanting for him to come home whole and safe. And that's what keeps us human, is our hope.
Right. Frances, thank you so much for being with us and for the extremely powerful book of poetry. Thank you.
Kathleen, thank you so much.
Frances Ritchie, her book is The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War. It has just been published by Viking. She was born and raised in West Virginia, worked in the business world for a long time, and left to teach yoga and write and work in a hospice. Her first collection of poetry, The Burning Point, has won prizes, and this one is about... It's about a lot of things. It's about her son's service in the Iraq War, their opposing points of view about this war, and what a mother goes through when her son is in harm's way, in a big way. Thank you to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up tomorrow during this hour. Bill Moyers will be with us. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.